I've been.
Take Me Out to the Ball Game, recorded in 1952 with trombonist Frank Rossellino. Tomorrow, the Phillies play the Orioles in the first game of the 1983 World Series, and with me to talk about baseball is National League umpire Eric Gregg. In 1977, he became the third black Major League umpire in the history of Major League Baseball. Gregg is known for his sense of humor, and Delaware Valley TV viewers also know him for his Phillies Franks commercials. On one of these 10-second spots, he holds up a package of Phillies Franks and says, "Hey, I can't favor the Phillies, but I do favor Phillies Franks." On another, he says, "Hey, I lost 108 pounds, but I still eat Phillies Franks." And that's a reference to the 1980 season, where Gregg cut his weight by nearly one-third. Eric Gregg broke his leg before the start of the 1983 season and wasn't able to umpire at games until August. He's a native Philadelphian and now lives just outside the city. And Eric Gregg, I want to welcome you to Fresh Air.
It's a pleasure being here, there.
When you're in civilian clothes, which you are at the moment, do you root for teams?
Well, I can't necessarily root for a team itself, but I am a National League fan. And I like to see the Phillies win the World Series, and there's no doubt about that. But as far as during the regular season, no. I'm just a National League fan, and I can care less who wins the games, as long as they're over within 9 innings.
Is there a guidelines for how much you're allowed to favor one team or one league?
No, it's just once you turn professional, you just have to know what's going on. I mean, we got guys screaming at us from both sides, and so you just can't get involved as far as being a fan. But when a National League plays American League in the All-Star game or the World Series, then you're a National League fan.
With your Phillies Franks commercials and your local reputation in Philadelphia, you're very associated with this city. Does that ever get in the way when you're traveling? And do people in the National League ever question that that regionalism?
No, only the fans itself. The fans say, "Well, Eric, you do Phillies Frank commercial. You do a lot of things in the Philadelphia area. Do you have a favorite of Phillies?" And I said, "No, I don't." And the league knows me. I mean, before you get to the major leagues, they have to scout you and they look at you and look at your background and check you out. And so once you get here, they're pretty sure what you're going to do. So there's no problem there.
Have you ever umped in a World Series?
No, I had a playoff game in 1981. I was selected to work the playoffs between the Montreal Expos and the Los Angeles Dodgers, and that was my biggest event as far as being in the major leagues.
Do you get nervous before a big game?
I'm more nervous than anyone. I can't talk to my family. My wife knows I won't talk to her before, especially before a play job. I'm very nervous, and I get upset, and I think I do my best job when I'm nervous because I'm concentrating about what I'm going to do, and I bear down. If I'm not nervous, I don't give 100%. So it's better off for me to be nervous. I do a better job.
In the current series, there won't be the designated hitter status because it alternates each year. Do you think that's going to work in favor of the Phillies?
I think it helped the Phillies because they haven't used it. I think it would hurt Baltimore because they're used to it and they take advantage of it. I think it puts more pressure on the manager to whether to pull the pitcher or not, and I think that's very important. But as far as a designated hitter coming to the National League, I don't think it ever happened.
You play in the National League where there's no designated hitter status. Do you favor working without it?
Yes.
And if so, why?
I like it because I think it takes away from the game. I think in our league, I think it's a tougher league because our managers have to control the game completely. They can't go with, "Well, I don't have to take the pitcher out." And that's so important, when to take the pitcher out. There's a lot of times when lefty could have been taken out and they don't have a pitch hitter. It's a different story in the American League when you have a DH. You don't have to worry about the pitcher making the last out because you have a DH. A guy like Greg Luzinski used to play here, and he's a good DH, and it prolongs careers. And I think that's great for that league to prolong careers. But in our league, I think it takes away from the game, and I don't think we're ever going to have it here.
How hard do you think the National League will work in resisting it?
I think Chuck Finney's our league president. He's against it altogether. He's from the old school. He's with the Giants and back in the day, and I think they're against it and the owners. I mean, we got a new commissioner now in the process, and the possibility could change. But someday they want to have all umpires just Major League umpires. They don't want American League umpires or National League umpires. So things are going to change. Someday we're going to have interleague play. But right now, I don't think so.
There's a difference in the placement of the umpire behind home plate in the National and American League. Can you describe that difference?
Well, in American League, there used to be a time where everybody wore the outside protector, which is called the balloon. And therefore, the strike zone was a little different because when you wear the balloon, you have a tendency to work higher, and therefore you call the higher strike. In the National League, we wear the inside protector, and we work more in the slot. Like as a right-hand hitter, we work over the left shoulder of the catcher, and therefore we can see the lower pitch, and we don't call the higher pitch. That's why it's always a problem as far as the strike zone. But other than that, everything is the same.
Does it work in any team's favor when, say, the World Series, you've got a National and an American League playing each other? You've got, say, a National League umpire behind home plate. Does that have an adverse effect on the American League batter?
Not really. Only time that could be an effect, if you have a pitcher like Steve Carlton, which throws a low slider curveball on the inside part of the corner. And it's tough for American League umpire if he's not familiar with him. But he has a good catcher staying down, giving a good shot. And what we do before each game, and especially in a situation like this, the umpires get together and they talk about certain players, like a player like Scotty McGregor. He has a tough move to first base, and the National League umpire is not aware of this. So they discuss it and they say, well, this guy does that. And now when it's time to work on the field, they're looking for things because the other umpires told them what's happening. So that's so important to get down and talk about various different type moves that different players have. So that's to our advantage as far as getting together. But other than that, it could be difficult to see a player for the first time. Like Lefty will cause problems for the American League umpires, and Scott McGregor will cause problems for the National League umpires. But if they do their homework, it should be no problem at all.
What else do umpires get together and discuss before a series?
Well, normally we're to eat and we're to drink. Other than that, that's it. We just talk about umpiring and what's going on and personalities and what kind of guy this guy is and the situation. I mean, everybody's a nice guy if nothing's happening. But in the situation, the guy could turn completely from hot to cold. So that's very important to know. And each umpire should fill each guy in on one particular player.
Is there someone who you were warned about, who you were lucky to know about in advance?
Yes, Tim Foley. He's now in the American League, thank God. But he was in our league, and he was tough to work. I mean, one day the sun could be shining, he'd be fine. The next day it could be raining, it could be terrible. So it's good to know what's going to happen, especially if you're an umpire, a young umpire. You like to know who's a good guy, who's a bad guy, who's a good guy in situations, and who's a bad guy in situations. It's very important.
Oh, what happens when someone's up at bat who you know has a real temper? Is that going to affect the way you make a call?
No, I just won't give him the benefit of the doubt. If he's going to yell at me on a close play, I won't talk to him. If I got a good guy, a fair guy, a guy like Mike Smith is fair, I'll discuss a strike with him. I got a guy like Tim Foley, I won't give him the time of day. You got to treat people the way they treat you, and they respect you for it, like in anything else. I mean, if a guy's going to come to you at work and give you a hard time consistently when you know you're right, you can't let your guard down to him. If you got a guy who's fair, you can be honest with him and talk to him, and they respect you for it.
What's an example of a time when you had a talk with a batter about a play? I mean, you're not going to change your mind on it, are you?
No. But here's an example. Okay, I'm working home plate, and I call a pitch that might have been a little up on Mike Smith. And Mike might say to me, Eric, I think the ball might be a little high. Not looking back at me. Now, he's looking towards the center field wall, and I'm straight ahead. Now, nobody knows he's discussing this pitch with me. But you have some players, like a Tim Foley or other guys, that turn completely around and not say a word, but look you right in the eyes. And you got everybody on TV, everybody on radio knowing, because the announcer's saying this guy's looking at Eric in the face. And he know he's arguing about the pitch. So you got to use common sense. If a guy wants to, yeah, sometimes a guy can give you a hard time without looking at you. You can give him the benefit of the doubt. But if you get a guy who's going to show you up by looking at you, you don't give him any benefit at all.
If you're giving someone the benefit of the doubt, does that mean the next time there's a close call, you'll call it in their favor?
No. It's just that you explain to him why you called it. We don't have to defend that calls or anyone. If I call a strike, you say why. I say because it was a good pitch. Now, if he says to me, was the ball in the outside corner? If he's not a fair person, I'm going to say, hey, was a good pitch, next pitch, same pitch, it's a strike. So you have to treat people like they treat you. And they know it. They know it. Now, some guys won't even say anything to you. What they do is ask the guy on deck. And you can see that. They ask the guy on deck and say, was a good pitch? And they say, yeah. So now the guy's even more mad because everybody on deck agreed with him. So you just have to use common sense. And they know what you do. And you have a strike zone you're consistent with, and you stay with it all the time.
Do you think players ever make a big scene yelling at the umpire to make themselves look good so it seems like they didn't really strike out?
All the time. You have players who want to take the monkey off their back, and they're going to say the umpire called a bad pitch when they know in their hearts it was a good pitch. It happens all the time. But you have to know how to handle yourself because you know, hey, nobody likes an umpire. My job is to go out there every day and night and do the job. I mean, I'm not going to get $150,000. I'm not going to get the TV shows. Well, fortunately, I got a couple of TV shows, but things like that, the umpire doesn't get the credit, and you don't expect that to happen. So, yeah, they do that.
You think fans usually know who you are when you're umpiring?
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. They can't miss me.
What happens when you've made a call and the fans think that it was a bad call and they're yelling and booing at you? What do you do? Is that unnerving? Is it hard to concentrate on the next pitch?
No, it doesn't bother me at all. Only time I ever got bothered, I was at the vet one day and I had a fair foul call and it went against the Phillies, and and the crowd was yelling at me, screaming. I expected that. But I looked up in the stands and saw my wife screaming at me. Then I was in trouble. But other than that, it doesn't bother me at all. No, it's part of the game. You expect that. And sometimes when they're booing, you get that more excited and hyped up to do a better job. So it doesn't bother you at all.
Sometimes the manager will come out and do a whole scene with the umpire. The manager can probably assume that the umpire is not going to change his call. So what's that arguing really about?
Well, he's usually arguing for the next call. He knows that he's not going to get that one changed, but he figures we have plays sometimes can go either way. And they figure if they give you a tough enough argument, the next time it's go either way, it'll go their way. That's why they come out.
Does that work? Is it effective?
That doesn't work. I'll tell you one thing. Everybody says you make up. As an umpire, if you miss a call for one club, the next time you have a close call, you're not trying to even up. You're just working so much harder and bearing down so much tougher that you're not going to make the same mistake twice. And it looks like you favored the other team, but you didn't. You just got to play right.
When you're umpiring at home plate and calling balls and strikes, it's really hard, I think, isn't it, to see exactly what's happening because the ball's getting pitched so quickly. What kind of devices have you come up with to help you figure out where a ball is landing?
The main thing is timing. And umpiring in all professional sports, you have to have good timing. If you have good timing, the pitch will call itself. And also it helps have a good catcher to stay down. That's why I'm so impressed with Bo Diaz, being a big guy. Normally when he came to the National League, we figured this guy's a big guy. He's not the catcher Bob Boone was. Bob Boone stayed down. It's very important to have a pitcher like Steve Caldwell or Dick Ruthven or John Denny, a guy who throws a good low strike. If the catcher's a big guy like Bo Diaz, you figure, well, gee, you won't get a good shot at the pitch. And Bo Diaz stays down. And if he stays down, you can see that low curve or a low slide in the inside part of the plate. It makes it so much easier for the umpire. But the main thing is not where the ball crosses, not where the catcher catches the ball. It's where the ball crosses the plate. And a lot of times you have a catcher, a young catcher that butchers pitches. I mean, jumping up and down, and a pitch might be on the outside corner. He might dive out to get it. You can't call that pitch a strike because it doesn't look like a strike. Even though you know it's a strike, it doesn't look like it. So the catcher is very important as far as getting strikes called for the pitcher.
Does the catcher ever give you any clues about how a ball was?
Well, sometimes they talk to you all the time. They might say, well, first of all, when you come out and you got a new pitcher in, you say, this guy throws sliders. He has a good fastball. He has a changeup, and he has a screwball that comes back in on you. And so it's good to help. It's good to know that. But a lot of times you go out there and you don't want to know that. You want to go and just look for yourself because you don't want to anticipate. An umpire or any type of officiating, if you anticipate, you're in trouble. So you go out and you look about four or five pitches and you get yourself on the side and you're watching from a distance. Then you get back there and just take your time and call each pitch as it comes in.
Are there any optical illusions when you're behind the plate watching fastballs being thrown?
No, once you get to the major leagues, it's all the same. I mean, in the minor leagues, it's a little different. But once you get to the major leagues, these guys are paid millions of dollars to throw the ball over the plate. And the main thing I found out being a young umpire, these guys can miss by an eighth of an inch. They can miss by 4 inches. And they go by your strike zone. If you're calling the ball outside by half an inch or 2 inches, they'll keep it there all day. And they'll try to sneak it out another inch. And now you ball, they'll bring it back in. These guys are big league pitchers. They know where to put the ball. Let's do it for a living.
Eric Gregg is my guest, National League umpire, if you're just joining us. You were the third black umpire in the major leagues when you started in 1977. What do you think it's taken so long for black umpires to become a part of the game?
Be honest with you, I think that the problem is that your average black kid does not want to be an umpire. I mean, we have umpiring schools. We have three umpiring schools throughout the country. And I taught umpiring school for 8 years in Florida. And my 8 years there, at the most, we had about 12 students. And some of them could umpire, some of them couldn't umpire. But I think the average black kid, if he wants to be in sports, wants to be a Dr. J or a Willie Mays or a Gary Maddox, whatever, they do not want to be umpires. And nowadays, you're seeing that umpires are getting some of the limelight and people see us and some are coming out. I think in all of Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball together right now, we have maybe six at the most black umpires. We have about three girls now. So it tells you what's happening as far as umpires are going on. We have a young man by the name of Charlie Williams who just came up this year in the National League, and we have a young man by Leon Merriweather is picked up by the American League. But other than that, in 107 years, there's been three. Emmett Asher was the first in the American League, and Art Williams was second. They're both deceased, and I was the third one. And it's very tough. It's a very tough job, and the main thing about umpiring is you have to handle personalities. and to go out there and be and wild and mannered and handle people calling you all kinds of names and situations on national TV, it's a difficult job. It's the only job in the world. You got to go out the first day and be perfect, and the next day be better.
Do you feel like you've faced any racism, either in the minor leagues or the majors?
Well, you go through that in anything. In any job, you're going to go through that. But I don't think it's been as bad as it could have been. I'm going to get the, you know, I don't get the real bad black slayings and things like that. But I get some looks and things like that. Well, you know, how could you call me out and look at me a little weird? But other than that, it's been no problem. It's been great. I mean, you know, the Italian guys get the same thing. The Irish guys get problems. I mean, when you're an umpire, you're going to get names. You're going to get calls. You're going to get things like that. So that's part of the job. So you have to expect that. Nobody's going to love you out there being an umpire. I mean, you're calling a guy. I had guys one time tell me, you know, when you call me out, you're taking food off my table. So you're going to get those things. You have to accept it. That's part of the job.
Yeah, speaking of food off the table, baseball salaries for players have gotten very high. Have umpire salaries, do you think, kept pace with other salaries in baseball?
I don't think we kept pace with baseball. I don't think we're ever going to keep pace with baseball because, after all, people don't play to see umpires. They don't pay to see us. And I think since we got our new attorney, Richie Phillips, we're finally making some money. And when I first came in the league, you say 77, but my first day in the National League was in 76. I came up for a cup of coffee, they called it, with 2 and 3 weeks. But when I first came up, the salary was 16.5. Now our first-year salary is about 23.5. And our top guy in 76, 77 was making 38.5. Now our top guy is making almost 85. So we're getting better. We're never going to be playing the players, but we're getting a piece of the pie, and that's all we want.
Were you, you were in the union during the umpire strike a few years ago. Are there any vestiges of that strike, of the hostilities from it, or the hostilities between the people from the minor leagues who umped while the major league umpires were on strike?
Yes, you're talking about the scabs, and we still have a little problem with that. First of all, we work with them on the field, which we didn't do the first year in 79, and that was against us. Now we're working with them, and some of the guys are working even better than before. But off the field, most of us don't have anything to do with them. But on the field, we work with them because, hey, if we had 50 of those guys in 79 working during the strike, I wouldn't be here today. Just as simple as that.
You said before that most young blacks probably, if they want to get into sports, want to be players because that's where all the attention is. What did you want to become an umpire?
I wanted to be a player, believe it or not. I thought I was the best neighborhood player. You know, you're in a neighborhood and you can hit balls off the wall and do this and that. And I went to West Philly High School, and my coach, Joe Goldenberg, said, "Eric, if you can't play for West Philly High, how the hell are you going to play for the Philadelphia Phillies?" And so, make a long story short, I went home that weekend. I was very upset, and I'm watching the game of the week, and Kirk Galli said, "Become a major league umpire, make $30,000 in 6 months' time." And I said, "That's for me." So I wrote away to umpiring school, and 5.5 years later, I made it to the major leagues.
What was life like in the minor leagues when you were learning how to do it?
Terrible. I mean, you travel by car. I mean, there was no hot water in locker rooms. You showered with the ball players. You stayed in Mickey Mouse hotels. I mean, it was just unbelievable. But you always had in the back of your mind that someday I'm going to be in the major leagues. So that kept you going. And you just had to work hard and keep going. I mean, if you love what you're doing, you don't mind, you know, scraping in the minor leagues for a little while because, you know, eventually you're going to make it to the big leagues. And so it turned out great. I mean, I had a good minor league experience. Fortunately, I had good partners, and I learned a lot. And the major leagues, after my first year, they brought my contract, and that really turned out great for me because I knew someday I was going to make it to the major leagues, and that's a plus. We have guys who work 15 years in minor leagues, never make it up here. And so being down there, I had no family at the time, so it was great for me. I had no expenses, just myself. So it turned out great for me. If I had to do all over again, I'd rather be an umpire than a player because I have something to look forward to for another 25, 30 years.
Sure, yeah, the career is much longer.
Oh, no. The average ball player is anywhere from 4 to 6 years, a major league player. An umpire, retirement age at 55.
Your weight has become pretty legendary, and your
funny.
your reducing has become legendary as well. Is that an important concern when you're at a game?
Back in the day, it wasn't, but nowadays, they're saying we're making more money, we get more and more exposures for our TV and things like that. Now they want the umpire to look the part. Before, they didn't care. I mean, before, you can just be on the field and call safes and outs and fair and foul, and it's okay. Now, from national TV, the instant replays and the money we're making, they want you to look like an athlete. So they're on me about my weight, and I just took off another 80 pounds after I broke my ankle. So it makes me feel better, and it makes you look better on the field. I mean, if you're overweight and you have a close play, they say, well, he missed the play because he's too heavy. You know, and we have skinny guys in the league who look great, but they can't umpire as good as some of the heavy guys. So we say to ourselves, do you want the guy who looks great, that makes mistakes? You want the guy who's overweight and get the plays right? So it's up to the league to decide. But appearance does help, and it does help you as far as making moves on the field. It does help, no doubt about that.
What are, for you, the best and worst spots to ump during a game?
I say the most difficult spot to work during a game is home plate because you have all the pressure. The most easiest spot to work is third base. But you never know. You can have a third base game and have one play, a home run call like I had in Philadelphia with Mary Sue Styles. I was working the vet. One Saturday night, the Pirates were playing the Phillies, and I had a fair foul call. We had runners on first and third with one out, and it was in September, the year that the Pirates won everything. They were called We Are Family that year. And Willie Stargell and the boys, and Keith Moore hit a line drive down the left field line. And if you've ever been to a Major League Stadium, you look up in the lights, and from the brightness of the lights, you see the glare, and after that, you see absolutely nothing. And that's exactly what I saw. Now the ball's leaving the park. The next thing I picked up was a beautiful ball girl, Mary Sue Styles. And I was looking at her thigh high, and she jumped up and down, screamed, home run, home run. I said to myself, Eric, if it's good enough for her, it's good enough for me. And I went home run, and all hell broke loose. And eventually I was lucky enough to change the call and got to play right. But so many things that happen to you as far as being on the field. The main thing is you just try to, you know, get the plays right and just take charge and control all the time.
Have you ever had a problem of looking at what's happening on a base and ending up being in the middle of a collision between a runner and a baseman?
Well, I had a situation where it was close to that, but it never happened where I got actually hit by a player. But it's been so close where you could have been. Yeah, it happens a lot, yeah. Because a busted play, okay? It might not be your fault. Say if it's a bad throw, now it comes toward you, now the second baseman has to leave the bat to go get the ball now. You got a perfect angle, but now, since the ball's offline, your angle is no longer perfect, so you have to move. So that happens. But not because of the umpire's fault.
The World Series will have some games starting at dusk. Is that a hard time to officiate? Can you see well?
It's extremely difficult because of the twilight, the high sky, and the players hate it. The players hate it. They complain about it all the time. But the umpire, you can't complain because the players can say they can't see. Fine. The fans understand that. But an umpire can't say he can't see. We're not supposed to see anyway. So we just got to do the best we can all the time. We can't alibi. We have to call the strikes and the balls where we see them, and we just can't alibi. It's more tough for us than it is the players because we have to call it. A lot of times they don't swing, and we have to make a decision. So it is very tough during the twilight hours, and especially on the West Coast when they have to play early because of TV back on the East Coast.
What about the night games?
Night games are easy because you have good lights and you have the good backdrop. It's no problem at all.
Do you think the television is the cause of dusk games?
No doubt about it. TV talks and money talks, and it's for a long time. I mean, the rain game they had in 77 was only because of TV, and that's everything.
How does it make you feel? Because there's obvious advantages of being televised, such as becoming a celebrity, for instance, and having a lot more fans that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's part of the game. I mean, the players enjoy the salaries they make. And in order to get those salaries, TV makes those salaries. So it's part of the game. You have to accept it.
A lot of our listeners will know you as well as from your umpiring through your Phillies Franks commercials, which you started doing how long ago?
5 years ago.
How did you first start doing that?
It was amazing because they normally do a different umpire every year. They started out with Doug Harvey, and they did a gentleman from San Diego. I can't think of his name right now. But one of our senior guys, John Kibler, they were the first two guys to do it. And all of a sudden, someone said, Eric, would you like to do the commercial? And I said, gee, I'd like to do it. I'm from the area. And so I've been doing it ever since. It turned out great, and it's been really a feather in my cap.
Do you improvise them?
Everything. I mean, I've just been into Phillies Franks ever since. I mean, I've been on all kinds of diets, and now I'm up to 1,000 francs a day with no bread. But no. I'm into Phillies Franks because, I mean, I have people come to me and say they know me behind a Phillies Frank commercial and dance with a Philly fanatic more than they recognize me from as being an umpire, you know. So it's just been a great experience for me. It helps me doing other things, and I'm doing other commercials and things like that. It's just been super.
Is there a lot of competition now amongst players and umpires to get the testimonial spots?
No, not at all. I mean, you have players who stay away from it, and most umpires stay away from it. And some guys like Tug McGraw can do anything, and some guys don't like to be around it. Some guys are laid back. Gary Maddox is laid back. He prefers to stay away from all that. Some guys, like the McGraw, can jump on it all the time. Steve Carlton prefers to stay away from it. So it's up to the individual.
Do fans always call you blind now? There's a couple of the commercials that make puns on that. You're holding the Franks upside down and looking right at it and don't notice that it's upside down.
For years, people said to me, is that a mistake? You had the Franks upside down. And I said, no, that's part of the job. And they couldn't believe that. They said, well, you guys probably blind anyway. But I think they think it's cute and the kids love it. And a lot of times I'm in the restaurants and people ask me, am I eating Philly's Franks? Or they see me with a hot dog, it better be Philly's Franks. But no, I think they enjoy it, but I have no problems with it.
You've played officiated at many of the different ballparks. Which kind do you prefer, the old stadiums or the new ones?
I prefer one stadium I would love to work at was Connie Mack Stadium, and unfortunately it was before my time as far as getting a chance to umpire there because the Phillies opened up here in '70. But I would say one of my favorite ballparks along the old stadiums is Wrigley Field, mainly because it's an old ballpark, it's a tradition, and tradition, and Babe Ruth played there. I just love the idea of walking the field that Babe Ruth played there. And we have all-day games, you have the nights to yourself. And I also love Dodger Stadium, and I also love my home park, Philadelphia. It's great. I like the AstroTurf because it's easier to work on, but it's tougher on your ankles. And I never knew that. All the older guys used to tell me, Eric, it's bad on your feet. Until I broke my ankle, I found out. It's like working on cement, the AstroTurf. So the natural turf is better to work on as far as your legs are concerned. But I say my favorite ballpark to work in would be Dodger Stadium at Wrigley Field.
Do you care to make any predictions about the World Series?
I like the Phillies in six. But everybody's saying that Baltimore's going to be easy. I wouldn't be surprised if Baltimore beat them because I think Baltimore has a super club, they have super pitching, and they have super management. But I think the Phillies right now are so hot they could beat anybody. I like them in six.
I forget who, I think it was a writer who had nicknamed the Phillies the Wheeze Kids at the beginning of the season because so many of them are older than the average age and older than what is considered to be the prime age in baseball. Do you think that they're having won the pennant in the National League is going to make any impression or set any kind of precedent about age in baseball?
No, I don't think so. I think they really still think they are the Wheeze Kids. I think they think they were too old to do anything, and I think the Phillies came along pretty good doing the doubleheaders. They didn't think they would make it through the doubleheaders, and they have veterans. And the main thing in baseball, have the veterans. You can have young kids out there every day, but these veterans have been through this before. They know how to handle the pressure. And all these guys have been in World Series and playoff competition. If I have to go down the line and put my money on somebody, I'd rather go with the veterans than the kids because the veterans have been there before. They know how to handle themselves. And I think it will have an effect as far as people saying, well, the Wheeze Kids did this and did that. But the young kids there, they can see how these older guys handle themselves and can help them down the line. I mean, guys like Bob Lanier and things like that, they can see that, and it's a plus.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us. I assume you'll be watching all the games.
No doubt about it.
Okay, thanks a lot for being here.
It was a pleasure.
And National League umpire Eric Gregg has been my guest. He's a native Philadelphian and still lives in the Delaware Valley. And he's been in the Major League since 1977. And, of course, the World Series starts tomorrow. 25 minutes to 4 is the time. This is Fresh Air, and you're tuned to WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. At 4 o'clock, we'll be featuring the second in a new 13-part series of Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz. Each week, we'll hear McPartland joined at the piano by a guest pianist for duets and conversation. And today her guest will be Marie Marcus, who was a friend and protege of pianist Fats Waller. Every Monday at this time, 91FM's arts reporter Julie Burstein joins us. Today, Julie reports on last week's production by the Philadelphia Orchestra of Verdi's opera Macbeth.